Zach Byam, Philip Lindsay sitting in here. We were chatting about Prime's book tour. That's another conversation I want to have because, Zach, I had never heard your Dion might walk away after this year once his kids are done take. And I heard you mention that on Friday, and I was like, man, that's something I had never quite thought about yet.
You haven't thought about that one yet?
Yeah,
that's pretty common. I feel like that's pretty common.
I would put the odds at like minus 400, minus 500.
That's crazy.
Just because, and I've said this to Phil a lot over the last 6-7 months, we literally cannot find an example of Dion coaching a football team where his sons weren't a part of it. So the next time in his 60s will literally be the first time. And I think he's going to follow his son around and be at games. And I think coaching coaching kids that aren't his while his son specifically, Shador, is playing quarterback, I just don't think you're going to see it. I just don't.
You know, Zach can be... You know, dramatic.
Crazy at times.
You know, the end of the world.
See, I didn't say end of the world.
I think that Prime will at least go for another year right after his kids are gone. I think he got at least one more year. I think he's going to be there as long as Rick is there. I don't know when Rick's contract's up with George, the AD. Mm. Once Rick leaves, I think that's when Coach Prime's going to be gone. That's just me, you know. Looking at the picture from the outside.
What if, to your question, if you think the same, what if there's success this year? Real success.
Yeah, and that's the one caveat I did build in. Could he get addicted to the Power 5 success and the stuff that comes along with it? And we didn't talk about that until this past week. Yeah. But if they have success, could he be like, this is fun? And they do have, and Matt would know better than me, but they had a couple commitments from quarterbacks that will be in the fold that were like 4-star kids, I think. So maybe he's like, can use his imagination of like, this is really fun. We're going to be good. I'll come back. But again, I will believe it when I see it.
But I would push back because I think I get what you're saying 100%. Coaching your kids is awesome. Dion's got the best. He told Jimmy Fallon, I don't have bad days, right? But man, I think there's so much to like, sure, he loves coaching his kids, but you know what I think he might love even more? Being the star of the show. And he's always going to be the star of the show. If he's the coach of Colorado, you're making your rounds on NBC, you're writing your book and then doing your book tour on NBC. Like, that doesn't go away just because Shador's not around.
No, I know, but he can get that on an NFL sideline. He can turn into a combination of who he already is and LeVar Ball. Like, if his son's playing quarterback in the league, like I could only imagine Dion and the camera flashing to him on Sundays. And guess what? Anytime he wants to be the star in Boulder, he could just show back up. You know, I'm not married to the take, but I kind of am.
Yeah.
I don't believe that Coach Prime will coach a down of CU football. I think he's loyal to himself and those closest to around him and not, you know, Boulder. I think, but it's been a symbiotic relationship. Both of these parties, I think, kind of needed each other, you know, and so I think it's been great for Boulder. They've had a 2-year commercial, basically. I think everyone has benefited from it, but that's just me.
Okay. We're going to have to get a little... Well, me and you are going to talk.
Oh, yeah.
Matt, what about you, man? I know that you're upset that you're not over there at the first practice.
I was okay with missing the first day.
Today this first day?
Yeah. First day of spring ball.
Okay.
We talked to Dion for the first time on Wednesday.
Okay.
And Pat Shermer, who's now the full-time OC. And Robert Livingston, who's now the full-time DC. The one thing I'll say about
Zach's response was appropriate.
Zach's opinion is shared by a lot of people that behind the scenes, we're waiting to see it before we believe it about him being here past his kids.
What do you think?
As far as I understand it, there has been a long-term contract that has been put in front of him that he will not sign. So I think there is some validity, a lot of it, to what Zach is saying. And to your point, this is a guy who's impatient. He wants to win now. You talked about commits. It's just visits from other, like, top quarterbacks. They haven't gotten any quarterback commits yet.
Yeah.
Do you really think he's going to the 5-star freshman well? I don't think so. If he goes anywhere, it's going to be the portal with a guy who can win right away.
Yeah.
So if he stays, but maybe, he's also not going to have much to do. I mean, he's got all this money. He's got all these properties. He's now single again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe he goes back and starts.
As he announced a breakup on social media. Maybe. That was interesting.
Yeah, the first time a head coach breakup.
Did you bang out that post between chemistry and lunch? Like,
Prime will be on Bachelor. 60
Prime will be on Bachelor. Oh, the Golden Bachelor.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Oh, my gosh.
Dancing the star, dude.
Yes. Dude.
That would break every ratings record. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Gosh.
It would be amazing.
She's gonna be like, I really like you, Bull Junk. Give me that rose back.
I don't know. I heard Prime with Shannon and Ocho on Nightcap talking about their dating methods. I'm good on his. I don't need to know anything more about Code Prime's dating life. That's all personal.
Yeah. Oh,
rock on, man. Rock on.
Oh my gosh. So we have so much to get to. Before you guys get out of here, I want to get your thought on March Madness real quick. Do you consider CU and CSU tournament teams?
I consider them, the phrase we were talking about today, they're on the doorstep of being dancers. Like, they're there.
They're dancing on their own.
They're not really there. Yeah, no, they kind don't of got are a date.
Dancing
Isn't
on that
their
Madonna
own.
Dancing on my own? Something like that. It's a play-in game. That's what it is. I mean, I had somebody get mad at me on the text line yesterday during our show when I called the first four the play-in. They're like, no, it's a legitimate tournament berth. I'm like,
okay. Yeah, they rebranded it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's the play-in. Let's be real. The only thing that I would have loved to see from the committee is them throw convention out the window and just put CU and CSU playing each other, the first four.
Oh,
that would have been
God,
so much fun. They're both in Dayton.
Happen.
I hadn't really thought about that. That's a great idea. That would have been, hey, if you're building a TV show, which is why you're doing this, the play-in, and have them play each other. But here's what I'll say is that I think for the programs themselves, I think CU and CSU are in a better position playing in the play-in game than they would be lost in the shuffle because here's why I say so. Because everyone is so anxious for the tournament to get started. That game tomorrow night and Wednesday night is going to do numbers.
Yeah.
It's going to do a way better individual rating than almost anything that you'll watch actually on Thursday. So the schools get a commercial. You're in the limelight and you have a chance to win, quote unquote, a tournament game. I think it's actually good for both schools. Ultimately, I agree with you. I look at it the old school way, but it won't feel like a playing game. And I've called those games for ESPN Fox Sports affiliate upstate New York. You're there, and I was in Dayton. Dude, it is a 10 out of 10 atmosphere. The world will be watching it, so I love it. I think it's great for both schools.
I actually, we talked about who got maybe the worst, the shorter end of the straw there of CSU or CU and what CSU was early in the season. I actually think the Buffs kind of got screwed more than the Rams did of... The Rams were really good the first half of the season. That team disappeared and never really returned to form. The Buffaloes, I mean, the last nine games, Matt, we talked about with the loss at Oregon, they were a damn good basketball team, kind of firing on all cylinders. I think they deserved a bit more love.
I was kind of underwhelmed when they played Washington State. When they, you know, they end up winning that one by how many points? 2 points? Six, three?
The win against Washington State? 58-52. They won by six.
Yeah. To me, I was expecting more explosiveness, more power out of the team. And I didn't get that. And then, of course, they got beat by Oregon. I think that where they are right now, I don't think they got the poop into the stick. I think that they weren't doing well at the beginning of the year. They caught fire. But they kind of are where they are. If they would have started hot, we wouldn't have been in this situation that we are.
Kind of mirror opposite CU and CSU of their seasonal arc.
So massive. Yeah.
I said ships in the night. If you put it, the seasons on graphs, they both start out well, then CSU keeps going up, CU goes down, and then eventually they swap, right?
At one point in time, CSU, Colorado State, was ranked 13th in the country.
And we thought they could get up into the top 10.
Don't tell people that.
They were, and I forget who it was, but it was like they were like giving their top four teams in the country.
It was Doug Gottlieb.
Yes, it was Doug Gottlieb who was like, Colorado State's the fourth best team in the country. Yep. I was like, wait, is David Roddy still there? They fell off, and then CU picked up steam. Depending on how you look at it.
I thought it was an appropriate seeding for both teams considering the seasons that they both had.
Yeah.
And as Nico Medved told the team after that got announced yesterday, somebody seems to make a run from these play-in games every year. UCLA did it. Mm-hmm. Down to the Final Four.
Correct.
So I'm not predicting that to happen. It'd be great if they even won. If they both made it to the round of 64, that would be fantastic. Do I think it's going to happen? We'll see. I mean, playing Virginia in that Tony Bennett defense, that's like a day at the dentist, man.
I was going to say, man, this idea, hey, they're not what they used to be. No. Just pack a lunch
and
bring a hard hat.
35.
Bring everything you got.
Yes.
And then Boise State last year actually played CU, and most of those Boise kids are returning on this team, and they were physical, and they beat them up at the beginning of last year. It's going to be a tough game for both schools.
No doubt about it. I can't wait. This is one of my favorite times of the year because the NHL and NBA are on the back half sprint of their schedules. The back half is relevant to both. We got March Madness. We got both schools in the tournament. We got both CU schools in the tournament for the first time in over 10 years.
Let's go!
And then, I mean, shoot, we even got some Rockies news tucked in there in a small little footprint. They bring the font down to like a 6.
Shout out UNC shout out UNC Greeley in the CBI, too.
Hey, okay, there we go. Yeah, there
you
go.
Shoot, don't leave them out. The Greeley CBI. Bears, right? They're the Bears.
CBI.
Wait, real quick, if we're going to shout out the CBI, my rec league lost the 40 and over championship.
Oh, get out of here, your rec
league. You want to talk about the CBI? It's the same thing.
The rec league? The disrespect.
Oh, hey.
Zach knows.
That rec league life, man. God almighty. All right, we'll get back to the NCAA tournament because I got a bunch of notes on both schools and kind of catch you up, even if you didn't watch a second of either school, and what you need to know before a tip-off here in the next, 24 hours or so. But the question that we begin with, are the Broncos playing checkers while we watch another play chess? That's where we'll start, coming up next.
With Zach Bye and Denver, Colorado's own Philip Lindsay.
To you.
Oh, man. Beautiful outside.
Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful day, man. Beautiful day. And I was telling you in the break, like, so I'm from upstate New York, the Albany area, a little town called Scotia, about maybe 25, 30 minutes from Albany. And, man, it would snow like this on a Thursday or Friday like it did last week. And that snow will hang around for 3 months. And about, you know, 38 degrees at a time, chipping off 1% over, you know, a three-month
period.
Depressing. It is, and it turns gray, then it turns to ice, and it just sits there. But here, man, 75% of the snow is already gone. I love it. I love it.
Spring. I think spring's around the corner, isn't it? It's not today, maybe tomorrow.
Oh, like the official day?
It's tomorrow, yeah.
Oh,
tomorrow's going to be the first day of spring.
I love it.
Let's go.
Well, we're off and rolling. We have so much to get to today in so many different respects. But where we'll start is with the question, are the Broncos playing checkers while we watch someone else play chess? And that someone else is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who made a trade for Justin Fields over the weekend for a 6th-round pick. not next month. Next year. Next year. And all of a sudden, the Steelers turn a room of Kenny Pickett, Mitch Trubisky, and Mason Rudolph into Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, and all it costs them is a 6th-round pick and $1 million. That is pretty wild.
That's real wild, Zach. And honestly, if you would go down the X or the Twitter, whoever, you know, whatever you want to call it,
Twitter.
And look at it. You like Twitter?
I'm not going X. I can't go X. It's Twitter.
But if you look down the on social media with it, the players from the Bears and just players from different teams, they're not too happy about Justin Fields being traded for a 6th-round draft pick. It kind of, people feel disrespected by that. People feel like he got disrespected by being told he can be given away from a 6th-round pick of next year. Not even this year. We're talking about maybe a second. We're over here, Zach, you and I are discussing maybe a second, a third, maybe a fourth and a third.
That was the conver.
And we're talking about a 6th-round pick?
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Wow, it is wild.
Well, here's the thing. The NFL oftentimes can be like the price of gas or something else in the market where the market itself tells you, it speaks.
Yeah.
And in this case, it kind of screams. It's not even just like a normal voice level. It screams that the initial projection of what it would cost to trade for Justin Fields was just so far off from reality. And I mean, Phil, we were even throwing out the idea of like, you know, it just takes one to give him a first. You know, could a quarterback desperate team say, screw the rest of this, hey, second and a fourth, third and a fifth, we'll give you a first round pick. And it ended up being a 6th. It's just, it's wild. I didn't see that coming. The rest of the league didn't see it coming. I don't think Justin Fields saw it coming. But the winner in all this, potentially, and I say the winner because they can't be a loser. There's no downside.
Yeah.
There's no downside. For really, Russ or Fields, the winner in this is Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you would think. You would think. Now, I don't know how Russ is going to truly feel about this unless they talk to Russ before it even happened. And my guessing is they did run it through him just to say, hey, heads up, we're getting ready to bring you somebody like Justin Fields. And obviously Mike Tomlin told Russ, you're going to start this year off. That's kind of, you know, the vibe I got when Russ was saying about it. But ultimately, man, that's a young kid that's going to be hungry. And I heard that he wanted to go to the Sears. I heard that he denied not wanting to go a couple other places.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, he ended up wanting to go to the Steelers in the end out of all the other teams that offered him, which I don't know how many offered him.
He probably knows he can win that job.
Ooh. You know what? He'll be the Wildcat quarterback.
Russ or Fields. I do think it's interesting because, you just kind of touched on it, there is a report coming out from Brooke Pryor, who covers the Steelers for ESPN, who is reporting that Fields will be definitively the backup and, like, quote unquote, learn from Russ. That to me is interesting and confusing. Why so far in advance would you announce Russ as the starter? I would have these guys, like, what has Russ done in the last 2 years comparative to Justin Fields? That, now I know the history in Seattle.
Yeah.
But the farther, every day that passes, that gets farther and farther in the rear view. I don't know why they would make their mind up on something like this so far in advance, as opposed to have them compete.
I don't think they thought they were going to get Justin Fields. I don't think they thought they were going to get him for a 6th-round draft pick. And when the Bears were able to offer him that, and it was like, we have to take this young man.
Mm.
He's talented, okay? The sky is the limit for this man at this point. We don't know truly what he can do, but we also promised Russ something as well. That's because they didn't think they were going to get someone like Justin Fields. Now they're able to get both of them. They have to still, you know, keep Russ's pride still intact.
Why would Pittsburgh have to keep Russell's pride intact?
I think that because at this point, I think that Russell Wilson is still better than Justin Fields.
Okay.
At certain aspects of the game.
Yeah.
And Justin Fields needs to learn and just kind of mature in different ways. I think that's why they want Russ to start the season off.
If you had to win a game, because your life depends on it.
Oh, here we go to life.
Uh-oh.
I'm not hanging off a cliff, right?
Phil is back hanging off a cliff by his right leg, and the only thing that could save you is either Justin Fields starting a game or Russell Wilson starting a game. All things are equal. No one has an advantage, yeah. Team-wise. They both play for the same team. Who would you start?
I'm calling Spider-Man.
You're calling Spider-Man?
Spider-Man to come get me off this ledge. No, I'm going to start Russ. I think that Russ is a better quarterback right now. I think that Russ gives you the best chance to win games, especially if they're tight games. We know Russ can still win when he needs to at the end of these games. So I'm going to go with Russ right now. Let Justin Fields marinate a little bit. Let him get his confidence up and then put him in there. There could be a change, Zach, by week 6 or 7.
Yeah.
You know, where if Russ is not doing well, that's kind of what it's looking like. It's like this is insurance, and Justin Fields' upside is a lot higher than Russ's at this point.
If I was hanging off a cliff and my life depended on it, and it started either Russell or Justin, I'm also starting Russell Wilson.
All right.
Which is why I think it does make sense to start with him, but it still doesn't make sense to me why they wouldn't have a competition and let it play out.
Yeah.
Just because, and if it's even, I go with Russ. Let him start, and then you can turn the page later in the season. But what doesn't make sense to me is before anyone even shows up for OTAs, is announcing that Russell's the starter. That doesn't make sense to me, but we'll see. I mean, it's going to play out. I'm fascinated by it. I'm absolutely fascinated by it. I'm even more fascinated by the situation than I was on Friday.
Yeah, but there's a reason why Justin Fields decided to come here, though, Zach. Just because they went out to the media and said Russ is the starter, I wonder what they told that young man, Justin Fields. I wonder what Mike Tomlin told Justin Fields. It's the same example of the Daniel Jones situation with Drew Locke. Right? We have people saying that Drew Locke had the opportunity to battle. Drew Locke goes to the podium, says, hey, I'm, you know, takes the humble route.
Yep.
I'm going to be the backup.
Yep.
In Drew's mind, Drew's trying to be that starting quarterback, right?
Right.
So somebody probably told Drew something, but Drew's trying to play it off. Just like they say, hey, we still want you to let everybody know that, you know, you are the backup. But just know you're battling for that starting spot.
Yeah. And even if they do initially rock with Russ, hashtag rock with Russ,
Let's steal.
Let's weld. Even if they do that initially, Russ is an aging quarterback.
Yeah.
Russ has missed time for 3 years in a row, pretty much. And for one reason or another, and I guess this past year doesn't count as much, but last year in 2022, he missed games because of injury. He had a hamstring, had a lat. He had a lat, Phil. Just ask him.
He blamed the lat.
Yeah, a lat, damn it. but also he missed time the year before that. And if your Fields, look how many backup quarterbacks played this past year. There was like 70 different quarterbacks that played.
There was.
I'll join the team that, you know, with that guy who takes a ton of sacks at 36 years old, Fields may be in there by week four. So we'll see.
Fields takes a ton of sacks too.
He does.
So who's going to be behind them?
It's funny you say that. There's only two quarterbacks. There's only two quarterbacks in the last 2 years who have combined for more than 100 sacks and interceptions combined, and it's Fields and it's Russell Wilson.
Ooh-wee.
So I have no idea how this is going to play out.
It's going to be interesting.
It's going to be interesting. All right. The Nuggets lost at the buzzer on national TV to a potential contender. And somehow I walked away feeling good about it. And I'll tell you why coming up next.
On Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. Thinking of the box from where I stay.
Am I wrong? All right, the Nuggets lost at the buzzer on national TV.
Buzzer beater. Dagger.
To a potential contender. And somehow, Phil, I swear to God, I walked away feeling pretty good about it.
Well, what was your reaction first? Like, Zach Bias sitting on the couch, okay, with a fake pina colada. We know you like the virgin drinks. Like, what were you doing?
Well, I was standing up. Was not sitting down.
Okay.
Standing up.
Okay.
I was watching it with my five-year-old, who, it's so fun, man. My son's starting to connect the dots.
Yeah.
On just stuff. Like, he wants to know who's every single team. Like, who is that? Who are these players? Like, and it's just, he's just a sponge right now.
My man's scoring 20 points a game at 5 years old. Like, what are we doing here?
He's loving it. And he did this with football, too. By the end of the season, Phil, this past year, we would pull up the logos, and he could say every team in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's just cool to watch a young kid fall in love with it. But so I'm watching it with my son, and I just couldn't believe Kyrie actually took that shot. It almost felt like a glitch in a video game. Like, oh, no, he didn't mean to take that lefty hook from that far out, and it went in. I couldn't believe it. That will go. Kyrie Irving is going to go to the Hall of Fame one day. I mean, he's had an incredible career. He hit the biggest shot in the history of Game 7 of the NBA Finals ever. And that shot, I'm mentioning that will go on his career highlight. That was a legendary regular season moment for him.
Kyrie had it in his mind that he was taking the last shot, no matter what.
Yeah.
No matter what. And you know what? Sometimes when you throw things up, they go in when you're good. When you're in the NBA, take it from me. I know how to shoot.
I would punch that shot to the to the second level. It'd be like club level.
You don't see this length?
They
call me Birdman.
It would knock over someone's drink in club level.
They call me Birdman like you.
You know, here's the reason I walked away.
Feeling good?
Yeah, feel like, not feeling good, but feeling like okay. Feeling fine. Feeling comfortable. Feeling unbothered. And I'm curious if you walk away with the same feeling, because I know you were locked into this game yesterday, is that I watched a team that wanted to be there more for about 42 of the 48 minutes.
Yeah.
I watched a team out-rebound the Nuggets to such an unhealthy degree. I mean, you look at the rebound, Denver was pounded on the glass, 60 to 37, 22 offensive rebounds. I mean, it's one of the least talked about. They did. They got dominated. But the rebounds in basketball, it's one of the least talked about things in the game. And I equate it from football. If I was going to do like a football analogy,
yeah,
that's the trenches. You can talk about the shot makers and the handlers and this and that, but like, if you don't rebound and end their possession and they get 22 extra cracks at it,
yes,
that'd be like coming up short on 4th and 3. And you still have 1 yard to gain. They're like, all right, you get one more chance. You get one more chance. And that's what oftentimes offensive rebounds are, because they're gathered right next to the rim. And that is the conversion oftentimes is the basketball version of gaining 1 yard. You're just putting it back in.
Either putting it back in, getting a foul.
Yep.
You know, going to the line or having one of your better players foul out. So, yeah, man, that right there is one of the biggest reasons, if not the reason why, the Denver Nuggets didn't come out with this win, because they didn't play well, Zach.
No, they didn't.
Okay, they didn't play well. They didn't play well on both sides of the ball, especially, like you said, on the rebound. It just felt like, I felt like watching that game, they weren't into it, right? They were just there. And it seemed like at times they were tired. And maybe they felt like, you know, we'll turn the switch on when it's time, kind of at the end of the game.
And
like,
they kind of did.
And they did. Let's stick around. Let's hang around. And then when it is time, let's make the shots when they matter the most. But you're playing against a playoff team.
Yep.
A team that wants to get into the playoffs.
Yep.
And with that being said, you have to bring your A game because they're looking at this as a playoff game.
Yes, and it felt like a playoff game. I mean, even in the first possession defensively, it was like, everyone's up for this one. Certainly Dallas. But in a game where you get absolutely dominated on the glass,
yeah.
Even if you lose on the glass by, say, 10 rebounds, which would be significant, I think the Nuggets win. But they got dominated on the glass, 22 offensive rebounds. That's 22 extra cracks at making a bucket in a game where you lose by a total of two. By the way, they had 22 offensive rebounds. Denver had just six. So
embarrassing.
They're almost quadrupling them up in that department. The Mavs also outscored Denver on the fast break, 19-11. They outscored Denver in the paint, 62-38. The Mavs were up 13 points midway through the fourth quarter, and Denver had a lead with seconds left. That's why I walk away. Jokic played a C-plus game. Jamal played a B-minus game. Collectively, not handling the trenches.
Yeah.
In the rebounding category, getting outscored in the paint, getting outscored on the fast break, and you still almost won on the road in a game that looked like it really mattered to them. That's why I walk away like everything's just okay here. It's fine.
I feel like I walked away saying the same thing, Zach, but my take was Jokic didn't have a good game. If Jokic would have had, you said a C-plus, C-minus game from Jokic. If Jokic would have had a B-minus, B-plus, they win that game.
Correct.
Okay, Luka had 37 points. Kyrie Irving had 24.
Luka's a demon, dude.
He is. Now, that's why people want the dynamic duo to be together, right?
Yeah.
You know, no disrespect to Jamal Murray. All right, but then you have Jokic only having, 16 points?
Yeah.
You know, Jamal having 23? So that tells you a lot right there. If Jokic just has a B-minus game, they win. And Jokic is always going to be the deciding factor.
Yeah.
He's the greatest player in this NBA at this point. And so when he doesn't play well and you don't pick up the pieces around him to help him out at times, like rebounding,
yeah,
then you're going to lose games sometimes.
What's 7 plus 6? That's 13, right?
Yeah.
What's 20 plus 16? That's 36. Jamal and Jokic combined 13 for 36 in a game on the road against a team that's playing really well.
Yeah, you can't do it.
And you still only lost by two. So it's you know, but I will say this, something that is on my radar here, and we've been talking about it, we've been on this for a while, is the way that the league has officiated these games out of the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Now, the masses in the last week, 10 days, are starting to catch up to it. It's being written about, but you can literally draw a line post-All-Star break to after All-Star break. They've tweaked the rules, and we can argue whether that's good or bad doing it on the fly, but they have tweaked the rules. And these games are being officiated like playoff games where they're biting the whistle instead of putting air into it.
Mm.
And the game is getting mucked up. It's getting so physical. That first half, it looked like Jokic was getting jumped. It was like, I mean, that man was...
That was hockey, huh?
Dude, that guy was taking a beating. And collectively as a unit, the Nuggets need to recenter themselves and get used to the game being officiated that way, because part of the reason, and I'm speculating, that Jokic struggled the way he did is he was disturbed with the way that he was
being played
and being officiated.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, Jokic is going to have to get used to that, because if they are biting down on that whistle, it's not going to get any easy for him, right? He's going to start feeling like Shaq back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the center spot. And when you're that big, for right or wrong, they let some of these guys get away with getting hit in a way that you wouldn't let a guard. Yeah. And I think there's subconscious, you know, bias, you know, from little guys like yourself who look up at these big who look up at these guys like, oh, he can handle that, like, type thing. And I don't think they're consciously saying it. I think it's subconscious, but it's something that element of the it's on my radar.
You're that parent.
What's that?
Poor Jokic. Man, no. That man like 7'10".
he's massive.
Big like a grizzly bear.
He is. But if they're gonna officiate it this way, he needs to get used to playing through getting fouled, because he is getting fouled. They're not calling it, and this is the new way that they're doing it. So he's got to reset his mind of let this be the expectation of getting hit regularly.
We got to have a segment for old MPJ, man.
Yes.
I think he deserves his own segment, his own time, man, because he's doing some really good things.
Let's just have that right now, coming up next.
Give me your attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little something about yourself. You're one of our flawless, ooh, you a sexy lady. But you walk around here like you wanna be someone else.
All right, so, Phil, you wanna talk about Michael Porter Jr. here, and we're extending our Nuggets conversation. And by the way, speaking of conversation, if you would like to converse with us, say hello, give us a pound, take a picture, maybe have Phil sign something, you can join us this Thursday. This Thursday at Stoney's downtown off 11th and Lincoln to watch some college hoops. Phil and I will be there live from 2 to 6 p.m. for the first day of the tournament. It is going to be, as the kids say, lit.
Let's go!
Or Liddy. It's going to be Liddy, okay? It's going to be wall-to-wall TVs.
Liddy!
Incredible atmosphere. Yeah. You and I are going to do the show live, and we want to invite our listeners, man. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, man. You said you're going to maybe take your shirt off, spin around like a helicopter.
oh, boy.
If I hit all my bets, you might see that in final hour.
I feel you.
Because I'll be spraying the board on that first day of March Madness.
Oh, man.
What do you want to talk about with Michael Porter Jr.? I'm curious.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a lot of places we can go with this conversation, but I know that Michael Porter Jr. has been one of those guys that hasn't been quite consistent like we've wanted, and especially with my journey now coming up here and watching MPJ every night he's playing and seeing the growth right now. All of a sudden, he just, it's clicking. And I want to know what's going on with that. Why? What's happening around there? What are you seeing? What's your observations on MPJ?
Well, let me just co-sign what your eyes are seeing. He is turning a corner of consistency. That doesn't mean it's perfect.
Yeah.
During this month, he's had a 9-point game. I went back 2 weeks ago and counted how many 25-point games has he had and how many 9 points or less games has he had.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's more of those single digits than there is hitting 25 or more. But, dude, he's averaging 19 points a game this month. And it's not like two or three games. You're talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in the month of March. And the last game he had in the month of February was 30.
Mm.
So he is fine. He looks like a confident shooter again. And confidence and making shots, they're peanut butter and jelly, dude. Yeah. I watched him play a game, I think it was against the Knicks, like a month and a half ago, where he didn't attempt a three. Like, this is not the guy that I know. Yesterday, he's on the right wing. He's covered. He goes for a shot fake that the defender doesn't bite on. He goes, screw it. I'm shooting it anyway. Right. I mean, the guy, MPJ's wearing the defender, and he shoots it right over his head and makes it. So I just think his confidence and where the source of that confidence is coming from. I just think oftentimes it's just a night where you see the ball go in and it just resets his entire identity in his own mind.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that, Zach. On top of that, I think a lot of the confidence is him going back and thinking to himself, why am I here? Why are they giving me this money? How did I get here in the first place? Right? Why are my teammates counting on me? What do I do best? And I think that he's starting to find himself yet again. And I think what helped was when Jamal Murray wasn't there and KCP, MPJ had to step up. And he had, I think, I want to say a 30-point game that night, right?
Yes, correct. I think that was against Portland on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that was a big milestone saying, like, hey, I'm part of this team too. I'm tired of people talking about me like I'm a number four option. When really, in reality, I can be a number two. I just have to put the work in. I have to put the consistency in. I'm 6'10", right? Nobody should be able to block my shot. Nobody should be able to out-rebound me. Okay, I can move around. I can do things. I can be more deadly with the ball out of my hands. That's what I need to work on. And when I get hot, I need to continue to shoot because I do have that confidence.
I want to pick up where you left off near the end there.
Mm.
Of when I get hot, kind of ... Yesterday in that first quarter, he was hot.
Yes, he was.
It was, as they call it, a Porter quarter, which, when I hear that phrase, it reminds me of when people would say, bubble Jamal, referring to his performance in 2020 down in the bubble. And I'd say, I don't really like that nickname because I don't want to be referenced on a day-to-day basis of something that I did 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
When is it just Jamal Murray, great player? Not, oh, that's bubble Jamal. We saw that 3 years ago. Like, I don't want to be known. Zach was cooking today on the mic. That sounded like 2018 Zach. It's like, what about
now?
Yeah, what about now, right?
Yeah.
And with Porter, it's like, we refer to him as Porter Course. Eventually, he just needs to be, you know, this version. But the game sometimes steers away from him.
Mm.
And it happened again yesterday where he was the best player on the floor in that first quarter. And the game, he doesn't have, I think, much of a maybe domineering personality combined with cohorts that don't go out of their way to make sure he's getting the best. It just goes away from him. And he's not getting the coaching staff to circle back and say, hey, whoa, we got to go back to, we have one of the best shooters in the world. Yeah. He just scored 12 points in the first quarter. We need to consistently get him involved. So for those reasons, he can just kind of disappear.
And you hit it right on the nail with that right there, Zach. It's the presence, right? It's his presence of like, hey, give me the ball right now without having people feel some type of way. But when you have two studs on the team with Jokic being the best player in the world, right? And you have Jamal Murray at times when he's cold, he's trying to figure himself out. So he's taking shots and shots and shots at times where it's like, it goes back to what MPJ said before. Like, sometimes the ball's not getting around all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And it makes sense, you know? But overall, he needs to have more of a dominant presence when he is hot. And I think that his teammates need to trust him in situations where we could have probably rolled Michael Porter Jr.
Yes.
Another quarter.
Yes, there's no doubt. Because you know? Here's the thing. The Nuggets' best players were not good in the first half.
No.
They had a shot down the stretch of that game because MPJ was so good in that first quarter. Denver had a lead after the first quarter. And, yeah, all those things I think are true at the same time. He doesn't have a domineering personality because when dudes have a domineering personality and you're making shots, that basketball's like a boomerang. It comes right back to you.
Energy, man.
But Michael doesn't work like that. And so I think he could do a better job of maybe just stepping up the vocalness of it. Like, hey, don't forget about me, you guys.
Or,
like,
hey, trust me, man. Trust me.
Yeah, there you go.
Put it in their head.
There you go.
I used to do that to the quarterbacks, right? They have so much going on during the game, in the middle of the game. And sometimes it's just like saying something like, hey, I'll be open. Or, hey, trust me on this one. Trust me on this one. It puts it in their head now because that's the next thing that they think about is what you just said.
Yeah.
So when nothing's open for them, they go down to their hot now. Okay, Phil said something. Boom. Someone like MPJ could say that to Jamal. Say that to Jokic. Hey, I'll be in the corner.
Yeah.
I'll be in the corner if you guys need me. It starts to resonate with them, and all of a sudden, they pop into the corner. You know, sometimes it takes something like that.
Even if he's not doing those things, it's incumbent on Michael Malone as the coach to make sure everyone is, like, sensitive to it. Mm. Because there shouldn't be a reason why one of the best shooters in the world, who is hot as hell, doesn't get featured more through the rest of the game. It just, you know, it just shouldn't be that way. But it's really encouraging here in the last, I mean, how long has it been here? Like maybe a month or so?
About a month.
You know, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect, all right? But he is figuring it out. And when I see an average almost 20 points over the course of a month, he's figuring it out. And what I will say is that never at any point this season, when he was dry as the Sahara, is like he never stopped doing the other stuff.
Mm.
And he used to. When he wasn't making shots, he would be in the tank. And it was like him getting 7 boards a night feels like clockwork right now. This is his rebounds moving backward. 7, 7, 7, 8. So it's like he's, again, it's not perfect. And he probably could have done an even better job yesterday. But he's figuring it out, man. So I'm encouraged. I walk away encouraged. I'm not bothered
it's
by what happened yesterday.
Zach. Yeah, I'm not. It's one game versus a really, really good team. Luka is a dominant player, right? Right? He's one of the best.
He's one of the 5 best players, yes. If not 3 best players.
You know,
in the world.
So you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. But I'm like you. You tweeted something yesterday that resonates with a lot of people. And it's when you have to play in a series, can you handle this team the whole entire series? And the answer is no.
No.
Right? No. You're not going to be able to stick with Jamal Murray and Jokic and MPJ, especially when all 3 are hot.
Yes.
They're unstoppable.
The Mavs dominated the glass,
yep.
Dominated points in the paint, won the fast break points. Luka went crazy. Jokic had a C-minus game. Jamal had a C-plus game. And it took a 35-footer from Luka and a left-handed hook shot, yep, from the elbow from Kyrie to win in their own building. So, okay. As we shift gears here, something happened over the weekend that may have Broncos country asking a familiar question. We'll talk about that coming up next.